We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, BronxPinstripes.com proudly brings to you the most exciting Yankees podcast in the world, George's Box.
All the dramatic things I've ever seen. George's Box. Goodness gracious. Goodness gracious.
Welcome back to George's Box. I'm JJ.
I'm Nick.
We've got Dan, and to a lot of people, it's a good day to be a Yankee fan. It is the Monday after the trade deadline that we're recording this. The new guys are going to be wearing pinstripes for the first time tonight. We made some moves. The trade deadline has come and gone.
Go ahead, Nick.
It's done. It's done, yeah. And I was very negative, I think, a lot of the first half of the season. And everything that I said previously up until now was under the assumption that we weren't going to obtain Anthony Rizzo, who is a left-handed bat, who is a gold glove first baseman, who has a championship pedigree and is an A-plus makeup guy. To me, acquiring a guy like him, we're going to talk about Gallo too, but acquiring a guy like Rizzo, to me, he brings the Todd Frazier effect of just making everybody excited, making everybody better, fit in. And he's three times the player that Todd Frazier was. Like, that's the kind of impact I think that Rizzo's going to have, and you already saw it in Miami.
So, I've been pretty vocal that I thought the Yankees should sell. I did not think Brian Cashman could make the moves that the Yankees needed and keep us under the luxury tax, and I still believe that. Because I do not believe that Brian Cashman made all the moves the Yankees needed. I think that he got very creative. I think Gallo, you know, if you're going to go for it, you got to go get Gallo. You're going to go for it, you got to go get Rizzo. I don't think we have the pitching. I still think I viewed the trade deadline like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday was a three-game series of the trade deadline. And on Friday, we threw out a day game stinker and got a pitcher with a 5 ERA from the Angels.
Yeah. I thought we should have sold too. I thought, you know, for the best, the future of the franchise, the better move would have been selling. But now that we bought and now that we've brought in two impact players, like, I'm excited.
Everybody who's got pinstripes on, listen, I'm cheering for everybody who's got pinstripes on every day. And these are our guys. I said this a couple years ago, like, we'll rock with who we got. This is it. This is the team. These are the guys I'm going to end up watching every game. Because every week I come on here and I'm like, don't waste your time. And then I waste my time. I watch all the games. But there's, you know, obviously I've been getting into it with people on Twitter. And there was one guy, Frankie something, who I've been going back and forth with. And he said to me after Cashman made these deals, like, are you going to admit you were wrong now? And I was totally wrong in Brian Cashman making actual moves. Like, Brian Cashman has, what I said, for the Yankees to make the playoffs, I said that they had to do something that really hadn't been done before. They had to win two-thirds of their games to finish the season after being about a 500 team. Or, now there's a whole other thing that's never happened before, and that is Brian Cashman fully going all in at the deadline and buying. Never saw that coming. At all. But if we do anything that is not win the World Series, I was right. If we win the World Series, I was wrong, and I can live with being wrong. Trust me. Nobody can live with being wrong for a World Series more than me.
Look, that's fair. That's fair. My favorite part about this deadline is that Brian Cashman didn't say, oh, well, getting Luke Voit back is going to be like a trade deadline acquisition. He just went out and got a better first baseman who was a better fit for this club. And we've talked about how Voit is a redundant player. He's a terrible defender. He's an all or nothing right-handed hitter that swings for the moon every time. And in Rizzo, he chokes up. He's a situational hitter. He's a way better defender. Like, I'm so happy that instead of waiting for an injured player to come back, they went out and fucking got a guy that was better. Like, that showed me a lot.
Yeah, went out and got a guy like Rizzo. Is he's got a baby face. Like, he's been around for a while, but he just looks like a kid. I think it's the eye black too, that it's just like, hey, this guy's just happy to be here. He's a ball player. We've seen him pitch a few times, and like, he's just ready to go out there and have fun. I mean, even watching the Cubs put out like a thank you Rizzo like video, and I'm just like, that's some fun excitement in a guy that, you know. Do we look at extending Rizzo?
Well, I'd like to. I don't think they'll extend him, but I would love to re-sign him in the offseason.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, I don't know, $80 million over four, you know, something like that. Give him 3-4 years, $20 million a year. I read that he grew up spending summers in North Jersey. Like, he's not from Jersey, but he would spend the summers there. Kind of like Jeter. When Jeter, you know, grew up in Michigan, but he spent his summers in Jersey, kind of that Yankee connection. So, you know, I think it's certainly something he'd be open to. He's obviously not going to go back to the Cubs. So, yeah, I think that's definitely in play.
Yeah, I mean, what's he making this year? He's making
$15 million?
$16.5 million.
Ooh, good guess by me.
Yeah, so I don't know. I feel like he'll be 32 next year. So you got to factor that in. I mean, not many people can say that they've won a World Series for the Chicago Cubs and the New York Yankees. Those are money-making places. Those are money-making places to win a World Series.
Yeah. No, absolutely. He's reunited with Chapman, who he won with in Chicago. So that's somebody he knows. And he's going to fit in anyway.
He is reunited with Chapman, who's someone he won in spite of. Chapman blew Game 7 of the World Series. Let's not forget that.
He did. But they don't get there without him either.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm not going to say that they're bad moves. I just think there was one more move that we needed to make, because especially when you come out of the weekend and Herman's going on the IL and, you know, it's a vague thing, you know, it's a vague injury. Could be a month, could be 10 days.
I'm glad you brought that up. I don't think he's actually hurt. I think this is a maintenance, he didn't pitch at all last year type rest, where he was never going to throw 200 innings this year. You know, they want to give him some maintenance. They just brought in Haney. It's a good time to kind of give him 10 days. If you remember, they used to kind of do this with CeCe with the knee. It's like, you know, we're just going to give you 10 days, and then after 10 days, he comes right off. They've been very vague about it. I would not be – and maybe I'm wrong, but I would not be surprised if he's just back ready to roll in 10 days. And I think they're going to do something similar with Tyone at some point too, by the way.
I mean, you hope that it's just that. I feel like that's a situation that you made up in your head, and I'm fine. Yeah, I'm fine with that. Yeah. You know, I'm fine with whatever you got to do. It's just – like, I mean, Tyone just wins AL Pitcher of the Month for July.
Who the hell saw that coming?
In June, if it was legal, I would have shot him in his face in the parking lot of Citizens Bank Park in front of his whole family.
Yeah, I would have too. I would have
been not even thought, you know, for a second. I'd have him walk maskless through a COVID ICU unit. But now, here's my issue with this team. It has been, and I think Tyone in that case is a microcosm. It's either feast or famine. It's a home run or a strikeout, and that's we have to find this middle ground. It's what Gary has been for a long time. It's what Stanton is. It's, you know. So I get it. You want to ride the hot hand, and I hope that Tyone can go out there and what he had like a one ERA for the month.
Yeah, for July. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Go out there and have a two ERA for August. You know, have a 2.5 ERA, and because that's a lot closer to who he actually is. Like, let's work off something that's real instead of the idea that for after July, August, September, October, Jameson Taillon's just a different guy.
Yeah, and let's not forget his ERA on the season, it's still over 4. He needs to do more to make up for that atrocious first half. I mean, he was non-competitive for April, May, and June, basically. So he's getting there, but for all the people who are like, yeah, Taillon's back, Taillon's sick, let's see him get the ERA under 4, and then we can start to have that conversation.
Yeah, I like to see guys get accolades and then like respond to that accolade. It's very easy to lose focus after you know the team tweets an AL pitcher of the month gif of you. Like, then I mean, it's easy to lose focus.
No, you're right. And I know you know you're a little bit down about the deadline, and just a little bit probably more down than me in general. And one area where I kind of agree with you is the offense clearly isn't back. They scored 10 runs in Miami in the 3 games, and all 3 runs that they scored on Sunday were unearned. So they scored 7 real runs in the 3 games, which is obviously not good. They won whatever 3-1, 4-2, and 3-1. So offense still isn't back, and that's concerning.
Well, and Miami has good pitching. That's what everyone, you know, they've got great pitching. I get that. They have good pitching. They don't have great pitching. No one there is winning a Cy Young this year. So they have good pitching, but we're supposed to be a great lineup. You know, we just added 2 all-stars to a lineup full of all-stars. I mean, has Odor been an all-star? He's probably been an all-star game.
Maybe one, maybe. And look, without without the Rizzo trade, they might win only one of those games. I mean, he hit the 2 homers, and then he had the game-tying hit on Sunday. He kind of single-handedly swept the Marlins by himself. So we could be having a totally different conversation if they just make the Gallo trade and they don't make the Rizzo trade. There's a chance they get swept.
If they just made the Gallo trade, we'd be so fucked.
That would be the worst. That would have been the worst case scenario. Yes, because that definitely wouldn't have been enough.
Because to a certain extent, too, with Rizzo, I mean, a big part of the clips that they had in the like "Thank You Rizzo" video is him just like he's on the tarp, he's jumping in the stands, he's walking the ledge of the wall catching pop ups. I mean, that ain't Luke Voit. That ain't Luke Voit at all. So, I mean, from a defensive run saved standpoint, both on like, you know, on balls in foul territory, on balls hit to him, but also on some of the throws from infielders that we have, Rizzo can really make a solid impact. And, you know, he's a platinum glove defender. So I think that the Rizzo move's a great move, especially if we can get into any kind of conversations around, you know, maybe re-signing him. Like, I don't know what his allegiance is. I don't know if he, you know, is interested in, you know, getting, you know, staying in New York. I don't think, you know, he's from Parkland, Florida. He went to the school with the shooting. Like that shooting from a coach. Yeah, that's like, his high school. So we don't have to worry that, like, he's dying to get to the Marlins, you know? That's always the thing with the – I mean, Cole, you had to contend with, is he going – he wants to be a Yankee. He wants to go home. So there's none of that. I think for Rizzo, it'll come down to money and who gives him, you know, the best chance to win again. I think as a guy who's already won a World Series, that can go one of two ways. You know, it can go, I need to get another World Series. Where I could go, hey, you know, I won my World Series. I'm just trying to like get money. He's not a Boris guy, which helps. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. He's a guy who I think very much makes this team better, more so than any other like trade that I've seen in a long time.
Oh, definitely. And you can't – if the Yankees don't want to re-sign him because they don't think he's going to age well, that's fine. But you can't not re-sign him because you think Voit's going to bounce back. The same way you can't not sign Corey Seager because you think Glaber's going to bounce back. The same way you can't not sign a stud pitcher because you think Seve's going to come back. Like, they have to get past this waiting for guys to rebound or waiting for guys to get healthy and just go fucking get good players. And that's what I'm happy about. That was my relief, because every year at the deadline we hear about how the big acquisition is going to be the guy coming off the IL, or the guy that's been sucking is going to get better, and it's refreshing to see them get past that. I think that's where a lot of my optimism is.
Well, that's, I mean, most of Yankees Twitter, that their strategy is like, if I just believe in these guys,
yes,
they're
yes.
going to play better. It's a Tinkerbell mentality. If you just believe, whereas like Rizzo, you know, I think it's an energy too. You know, the dugout looked like they were having fun for the first time in a long time. He's not going to like take, I mean, cause he's a rental player. That's all he is. Like, it might just be for this little bit of time we have him and that's it. But Gallo we have for another year. And so with that, I mean, Stanton played the outfield for two games. Stanton's going to play the outfield tonight.
Yeah, he's going to play right field tonight, get Judge off his feet. DH Stanton looked, you know, he made the plays and left. I wasn't, you know, analyzing his every movement, but he made the plays he was supposed to make. That's fine.
Don't embarrass yourself out there. Don't do anything. Hey, if a ball gets into the corner and you can't get to it, you can't get to it, you know, like that. But catch the balls that are hit right at you. Catch them to your left. Catch them to your right. Take your first step back. Just do the basics. I'm looking for a full outfielder next year out of him. Like, that's what I'm expecting. Anything less, I think, is like the ability to do that, still probably getting most of his starts at DH, but the ability to go out there and not be a negative to the team in the field while also creating these half days off for other guys on the team.
Yeah, that's what he's got to do. And I'm excited to see. I think at some point they're going to throw Gallo in center. I'm excited to see that, not only because it means Brett Gardner's on the bench, but because, you know, I just want to see him play there. We've heard he can play there. He won a gold glove, I think, in right field. But apparently he's a decent center fielder, too. And for a team that's gotten legitimately zero center field production this year, that's very intriguing to me, the idea of Gallo in center, Judge in right, and Stanton in left.
When you think of center field for the New York Yankees, it's DiMaggio, Mantle, even Bernie Williams. Even defensively, like Gardner has been a really great outfielder for a really long time. His age is showing.
And he's still above average defensively. Yeah.
But if you've got an outfield that's Judge, Stanton, Gallo, I mean, I'll take losing maybe a little bit of ground coverage in center field, but also I think Gallo at full speed is better than jogging Hicks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that we don't have to just sit back and wait for Hicks next year and hope that he's healthy. Like you said, the Tinkerbell thing. We don't have to hope that Clint Frazier is going to get past all of his issues and Andujar. Like, we can stop hoping on these question marks, and now we have legit guys that are ready to roll. It's very refreshing.
I mean, obviously, we still have the rest of the season to go. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if Hicks is back at center field next year and we're looking at a Gallo, Hicks, and then like a Judge, Stanton platoon between like DH, right field, kind of going back and forth.
You're right. In March, we'll be looking at that. But you know, by mid-April or May, Hicks is going to be on the shelf. It's just what he does. There's no reason to think as he gets into his 30s, he's going to somehow get healthier. It goes in the opposite direction.
We've got
so it's good that we have these insurance.
So much on that contract.
Stupidest deal ever. But yeah, they're going to have decisions to make, not only with Rizzo this offseason, Gallo the next offseason, but just getting back to this year, the one thing that I didn't like about this deadline is now Glaber is 100% locked into shortstop. They didn't get any kind of insurance policy, whether that be an Andrelton Simmons or just a defensive replacement. Freddie Galvis was dealt to the Phillies. Like, they didn't do anything there, and he's hitting .240. With six homers, and he's been the worst shortstop defensively. I think his WAR is around zero. He's pretty much given them nothing, and it's hard to win a World Series when you're getting nothing at a shortstop.
I just realized that Aaron Hicks is going to be on the Yankees through 2025. Ooh. You threw out Freddie Galvis, and so once we got Gallo and Rizzo, we had to be out on Story. We're not going to defense our way to the World Series, right? We needed to get some kind of pitching. It sounds like the Story price just, you know, wasn't there, didn't make sense. Maybe at the end it could have been something that, like, hey, we're just looking to dump him. But at the same time, because he's not on a big long-term deal, the ownership got so much shit for how bad the Arenado deal went for them that they just, like, they couldn't be taken advantage of because all three of the Rockies fans would have been pretty pissed off. But, yeah, I mean, it means that Glaber is the shortstop. And, you know, it makes a lot of things interesting for the offseason, too, of, like, do you still go after a Corey Seager? If so, where does Glaber go? If he's going to second, where's DJ go? Does he go play first base and then we don't go after Rizzo? I think it comes down to, I think you're going to sign one infielder. And it's either going to be a Seager or a Rizzo.
That's interesting to me. Like, we don't owe Glaber anything. Like, they don't owe him any money. They haven't committed to him. And if he hits if he finishes hitting 240 with 10 homers and is 31st in defensive metrics, like, why would you keep sitting around and waiting and hoping when you have the golden shortstop class? Like, you're never going to have a better or deeper shortstop class this offseason. So if you're going to give up on Glaber, this is kind of the offseason to do it, realistically.
Maybe try to move him for some pitching.
Yeah, problem is his stock's going to be low. I don't know what they're going to do with him. I just don't want him and Voit to deter them from making moves is kind of my point.
Yeah, I mean, we very much approach it the opposite of, I think, most Yankee fans. I think I definitely do, and I think it's just my age, that, like, I'm only as faithful as my next best option. It's like, I don't give a shit about any of these guys.
Yeah. No, for sure. And just with Glaber specifically, it's just been such a troubling downward trend since 2019. And I don't see any evidence that he's going to turn around. Like, it's not like he's ripping the ball right at people or, you know, getting unlucky. He's inconsistent in the field. He strikes out a lot. He pops up a lot. He's got 12 homers since the start of last year. The power has completely disappeared. So, I mean, I haven't looked at all those underlying bullshit metrics, but there's not a lot of things that we're seeing that makes us think he's going to turn it around.
Yeah, and I honestly, I don't give a fuck about, like, these luck metrics.
Yeah,
people are getting so big on trying to, like, well, if you look at how unlucky they are, I mean, he's got a lower WAR this season, Glaber, for the Yankees than Anthony Rizzo has for the Yankees.
Tells you all you need to know.
Yeah.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, again, I want the Yankees to do the unthinkable and, I don't know, somehow find an arm, whether it's, you know, hey, Clark Schmidt comes out of nowhere and he's able to really contribute in a really mediocre way for the, you know, for the final push in the playoffs. And, like, I'm being serious when I say that. Like, if you can go out there with this lineup, if you can go out there and just not shit the bed, you have a chance if this lineup gets going. But there's a lot of ifs. I keep saying if a lot, which is not really how you win a World Series.
No, there are a lot of ifs, and in regards to the lineup, I actually want to read you what I would put out there as a lineup. There's a lot of different things they can do, and I want you to kind of react to what I have. So this is what I'd like to do tomorrow, tonight, whatever, assuming, you know, Voit's still on the shelf. Leadoff is Gallo in left field. Judge in right, batting second. Rizzo at first base, batting third. Stanton DHing, batting cleanup. Gio Urshela batting fifth at third base. DJ batting sixth at second. Gary Sanchez catching, hitting seventh. Glaber at short, hitting eighth. And Greg Allen in center field, batting ninth. That is how I would roll.
Does Gallo lead off?
I don't know if he has before, but he's got a 380 OBP and he sees a ton of pitches. So true. I kind of like it. And DJ hasn't really been getting it done up there. That's the other thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to see DJ back in the lineup tonight because it was just like, you know, the timing of like, you know, what the fuck? You know, just when the reserves come in, you're
sore
ready.
Tricep too. It was a little weird. Like, where, when did that come from?
Yeah, was it a throw? Was it a swing? I'd like to know a little bit more there. And what's up with Gio?
Gio tight hamstring, but not going on the IL.
Yeah, just kind of fighting through it, which, hey, I like. You know, he's made himself available. The interesting thing for me is because I think the – so I don't have an issue with your lineup. Like, anything that keeps Brett Gardner out of it, like, I'm here for. Just because I don't – like, it's – he's not the guy. Greg Allen has been playing well. Like, I'm – we're talking about the ninth spot in the lineup. Play the hot hand. Whoever's
and
playing
he's a
better.
Switch hitter, too. So that's a little bonus for Allen.
Yeah.
He switch hits.
So here's my question. And it is because I know, you know, fans get so attached to the players. I mean, everyone wants Voit back, right? And he's going to start a rehab stint this week. So I think that if we didn't trade for Anthony Rizzo, Voit is not going on a rehab assignment.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because like he didn't the last two times.
Yeah, he's back in the lineup, you know, probably today. Do you think they're just buying time knowing someone will get injured?
Yes, I think they want to ride this out as long as they can. Like, I think this could be a two-week rehab assignment. They want to kick the can down the road before they have to make a difficult decision. But to me, there's not much of a decision to make. When Voit comes back, he's the backup first baseman / backup DH.
So who comes off the roster? Because
that I haven't dove into.
Gio is our backup shortstop, right? If we don't have Tyler Wade, it's Gio, and Gio's fighting a hamstring. That's not exactly a good expand your range, you know, injury. So does Odor end up being the odd man out?
I think before they do that, they might go short in the bullpen.
Okay.
The thing is, I don't think all of these guys are going to be healthy at the same time. Like, I think by the time Voit gets back, another position player is going to be injured. When in the past 5 years have they all been healthy at the same time?
Yeah. I mean, but the only thing that gets us over the hump is if people can stay healthy now.
Yeah, no, you're right. And a lot of people are saying, oh, with the ideal lineup, it's, you know, it's Voit at DH and Stanton in left field full time. I just don't think that they are going to play Stanton in the outfield 6 days a week for the rest of the season after not doing it for 2 years.
Yeah, no. Stanton, I think Stanton needs to play. I mean, I was shocked when I saw the Saturday lineup.
Yeah, me too.
Like, shocked. I assumed he'd play Friday and Sunday.
Me too, yeah. I figured they wouldn't go back to back.
And then to see him back in the lineup in the field today, also kind of surprising.
Yeah, I guess they're trying to ride the momentum out, and they wanted to get Judge off his feet, and that's the perfect time to throw Stanton right. And playing right field at Yankee Stadium, man, that's about as easy as it gets other than playing left at Fenway,
yeah,
you know, in terms of ground to cover.
I think it's probably easier to play right because you're not dealing with shit coming off the wall.
Right.
You know, turning around. I don't need
– there's a garage out there.
Yeah, I don't need with his whole – like, I don't need Stanton turning his whole body around. He'll pull something there. I think we probably see Stanton in the field 3 days a week, maybe three, two, the rest of August, with then 2 or 3 days of DHing, depending on how many games they're playing, and then 1 day off a week, probably. And then I think we see that for the month, and then we see what September is. You know,
my
then
answer was going to be 2 days too.
Yeah, like, do we, you know, how pedal to the metal do we need to be? Because I don't know. I just kind of view like the entire season. Like, let's say you want to put a deck on your house and you go to a contractor, and that's, you know, Cashman and Boone Contracting. And you say, I need this deck ready to go for October 1st. October 1st. It's February. October 1st, though, I got a shindig going on. I need this deck done. And hey, you could get really far ahead of schedule, or you could bring it down to the last day of September where I got to figure out if my deck's going to be ready to go or not. And they've chosen the later option, you know, the latter option to say, hey, you know, we're not going to be ready in advance. We're not going to clinch the division by 7 games. But at the same time, the Rays lost Glasnow. Like, I mean, a lot of things change right there.
Huge for them, I think, because he's going to have to get Tommy John or Tommy.
Yeah, he's
John
out next. He's
right?
Out likely all of next year too.
Okay, so but the thing about the Rays is, you know, they're just going to find somebody else to come in there and probably throw 100 miles an hour. To me, they have two choices with Stanton. They can ramp him up hard in September, get him playing maybe 3-4 times a week, and make him the left fielder for the playoffs, and you know, DH Voit. Or they can say, they can bubble wrap him in September and say, look, we just want you healthy for the playoffs. You're really just going to DH in September. I think they're going to go one of those two extremes. I don't think they'll play it in the middle necessarily.
Well, I think you have to keep him moving, though. It's like one of those, like, you don't move it, you lose it, especially as it gets colder. Like, you got to keep the muscles loose. You got to keep him out there doing it. And hey, who knows? Maybe they're simulating before games, like him getting all that work in. But you can't just, because if you bubble wrap him in all of September, you're hoping on like October 25th or whatever it is, when it's 42 degrees maybe, that now you're going to put him out there against the Dodgers. Actually, it'll be pretty warm in Southern California.
Right? Yeah, maybe he could just play out there. No, dude, there's no set way to go about it. There's no proven theory of like this is the way that works and this is the way to keep him healthy. Not only is he fragile, he is an extremely slow healer. Like, you know, most guys come back from a strained calf in 3 weeks. It takes him 6 or a quad or whatever. Like he does not come back quickly from injuries. Every injury for him is at least a month.
Yeah. No, and it's all size. It's all about his size. And so, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they piece this together. I mean, I still have a very little faith in Aaron Boone.
Oh, zero.
Especially because, like, we've taken most of the decision-making out of his hands by making some of these trades. But, like, Rizzo isn't making the calls to the bullpen.
No. No. And speaking of Boone, I don't know if you caught this. One of the beat reporters, his name was Justin, basically tweeted that Cashman finally admitted that he hands Boone a lineup card every morning. And basically that Boone's allowed to tentatively make a change or two, but that if he does make a change and it doesn't work out, like the analytics department will kind of say, I told you so.
Yeah.
So for all the debate of who makes the lineup, does he not make the lineup? We knew that fucking Boone isn't sitting down and writing the lineup every day. Everybody knows that. But now we kind of have it, the proof that, all right, Cashman's making the lineup every day.
Here's the thing, though. I don't hold that against Boone. I think to do it any other way than to start out with, I let the analytics spit out a lineup for me, and then I'll make adjustments, I think makes sense. I think the adjustments stink. And I think they're pretty much all bad decisions. And then, I mean, unless he's wearing a buzzer of some kind that says, hey, you make this pitching change right now, you know, he doesn't know how to manage a bullpen.
Oh, clearly he doesn't know how to do the bullpen, but I don't think he pushes back that much. For instance, you know, Cashman admitted that the analytics team, it was their idea to do the Davey for one inning and then Jay Happ come in, which everybody knew was a disaster. Boone clearly didn't push back on that. So that's a scenario where we know he didn't push back. Regardless, you know, it's kind of a suspicion that everybody had that it was just kind of nice to see it come out into the open. You know, they're going to break up these lefties and the righties, though, every single game. And now those elite right-handed relievers that would typically come in the seventh inning and blow us away, they won't be able to do that as much anymore since we have some balance.
Like it gives us, I mean, we have better hitters, professional hitters, in those spots, silver sluggers in those spots where instead of Luke Voit fucking hacking away or, you know, Frazier watching a pitch come right down the middle or in Duhar with his helicopter, you know, swing, we're going to see pitches. We're going to get to bullpens. And when you get to the bullpen, then we should be able to blow things open. But it's just a matter of, like, it's got to happen, and we have to not be down five runs already.
No, exactly. And they got to get rolling quickly. Luckily, they have a very soft schedule coming up, I believe. So we have three at home against the Orioles. We have four at home against Seattle this weekend, who's right neck and neck with us for the wild card. And then they go to Kansas City for three. So those are 10 very winnable games. I think you kind of you have to go 7-3. 8-2 would be awesome, but we've talked about it. They got to play 650, 700 ball or whatever the rest of the year to make the playoffs. So with a soft schedule like that, with most of the games at home, have to go 7-3 over the next 10.
Got to go 7-3 at least. You want to go 8-2. I mean, tonight's Orioles game, we should score 900 runs.
Jorge Lopez is legitimately the worst starter in the in baseball.
Yes. So you got to win that game. You've got to sweep the Orioles. You don't go out and get Joey Gallo and Anthony Rizzo to not sweep the Orioles.
To me, I'm fine with 5-2 this week for the Orioles and the Mariners. However that manifests itself, whether they take 2 out of 3 and then 3 out of 4, or whether they sweep and go 2, I'm fine with 5-2 this week. But no, I'd love to sweep them. But you can't assume that, man. We're 6-4 against the Orioles. We haven't swept them yet. So it's hard for me to sit here and be like, yeah, we're going to sweep, or we need to sweep, because we haven't done it.
I'm not saying we're going to. I'm saying that's what we have to do.
Okay. Okay.
You know, like, that is – if you – like, the Mariners are one game behind us. Like, they're not – they're not the Mariners of old. I mean, they're not the best, the 98 or whatever, the 2000 Mariners. But at the same time, they're not last year's Mariners. Like, they are playing us to take our spot in the standings.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
So,
yeah, coming to the – we already took 2 out of 3 from them in Seattle. Now they have to come to the East Coast, which is kind of a bitch for a West Coast team. We're going to have Cole going in one of the Mariner games. I need 3 out of 4 against them. That series is more important than the Orioles series.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and they're going to – you know, the Orioles series, I don't view playing the Orioles as like, hey, we're going to see their best punch. That's just like – I think when we lose those games, it's because we took our eye off the ball. Seattle, we're going to see their best punch. Like, this is what they are, you know, trying to do. They're trying to make the playoffs. They're trying to shock the world. And who knows, though? They're playing Tampa first. Tampa could take some of the wind out of their sails.
That's a lot of traveling, too. You fly from Seattle all the way to Florida, which is basically the longest flight you can make in the country. Then they got to come all the way up to New York. They could be pretty beat up by the time they get to us on Thursday.
Yeah, I don't know where they were this weekend, if they were home. But yeah, I mean, that's part of playing in Seattle. You have the most miles of any team.
I remember that when Cano signed and reading all those articles about how much he was going to hate it, and he did.
I think I wrote an article. It was like, congratulations, you're the second Dominican in Seattle.
Yeah.
You're so far from getting good food.
I hope good you coffee, like coffee. Though. Isn't it weird we haven't played the Orioles since we've been there? It's a long stretch that we haven't played them.
Because it feels like we played Tampa and Boston every 4 minutes.
Yeah. Weird schedule.
I feel like we've played the Blue Jays a lot too.
Yes, we have, but we played them in all different places.
Yeah, we're gonna play them in what, 3 cities this year?
Yeah, and let's not forget about them. They, you know, they got Barrios.
They're a game behind us too.
Yeah, and they're going back to Toronto. They're gonna be much more comfortable. They're playing at home now. They're gonna be energized. They are not to be taken lightly.
They're not actually a game behind us. They're tied with us in the loss column. They've got 2 games, so we've got, you know, oh, and they're losing to the Indians right now in the 9th. I don't think that they're a team that, you know, is built to go far this year. They're, you know, they're clearly on the cusp of it, but just not there yet. So I'm not as worried about them. I think even the, like, going to Toronto thing, I don't know that that's going to, like, energize them. Do they have fans in the stadium there?
They do, and they're going to be sleeping in their own beds again. I'm sure they're pumped to be back. It's been a year and a half.
Is it their beds? These guys aren't. They're not born and raised in Toronto. They're not Drake.
No, but I'm sure a lot of them have homes there if they're on the team.
They haven't been there in 2 years. That's not home. Like, legally, they haven't been able to go there. So even if you had an apartment before the season, you got that shut down at some point last year.
But still, they've been bouncing around from Florida to Buffalo. It does bring some stability to say this is where we're playing for the rest of the year.
Yeah. COVID cases are going up, though. You're gonna let them in and out of the country, Trudeau? Like, if they get on a win streak, like, I kind of need the borders shut down again.
No, seriously. Whatever it takes. Berrios was a big move. They gave up their two best prospects, but he was, you know, the second best pitcher on the market after Scherzer at the deadline. So that could be pretty big for them. Everybody in the AL East got better, except Baltimore, obviously, because they never improved.
Yeah, but they kept Trey Mancini, so they're happy.
Yeah.
Like, that was it. Just, oh, well, we kept a guy who's been here for forever and is about to be a free agent. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. We have something to watch. Our run differential's back to zero, so we're not in the negative anymore.
And, Blue, you know, Jays, I mean, are still plus 70.
Who?
The Blue Jays are still, what, plus 70,
plus 107. Seattle's minus 56, and they're a game behind us.
That's
so weird. Like, within one game in the standings, it's zero, plus 107, minus 56.
Well, we haven't had any blowout wins. We blew out the Tigers. We blew out the Orioles when me and you went in the governor's suite. And then I can't think of really many other blowout wins that we've had. I think they've had like under five wins where they've won by six or more runs. Like, they need more of those because they're using their high leverage relievers. Like, every win is a struggle.
It's weird. So, like, you've got Tampa, Houston, and Chicago are all in first place. And Tampa and Chicago have a plus 112 run differential. Houston's plus 149. Always just going to be in the playoffs. Doesn't matter what they did. There was no punishment. Boston is plus 48. Oakland's plus 52. And then after that, that's the line of demarcation for you're not in the playoffs anymore. There's us sitting at zero. Toronto at 107. And then it's all negatives. Minus 56, minus 30, minus 43. Then on the NL side of things, you've got the Mets are sitting in first place in their division at minus 7. And then 8, I don't know what they are in the division. I'll check in a second. But 8 games back in the second wild card spot is Atlanta at plus 49. Right behind Atlanta, that's minus 20. Run differential's wild.
Yeah, some teams blow out teams or get blown out, and some don't. Like, I feel like even we don't get blown out or blow out. All of our games are one-run nail-biters. It seems like it makes sense to zero run differential.
Yeah, pretty much. But this lineup, like, you know, it just – we need to open up for, like, a nice, like, three-game stretch. Really feel good. But it's tough to do that with Tyler Wade on the roster.
Oh, my God. And did you hear the John Sterling call? Like, this is why he's a great player. Or, like, he made a defensive play, and they're like, every time he plays, he shows why he's such a great player. It's like, John, I love you, but oh man, no way.
Mean, John Sterling's an old man who shows up places with bandages on his head nowadays. Like, he's a great announcer for a long time, but Tyler Wade fucking stinks.
He does. What did you think of watching the games in Miami, like the aesthetics of it? Like, it looked kind of dark. Kind of weird inside.
So I'm colorblind. And so what was that? Oh, Dan's colorblind.
Dan's colorblind too. I'm a little left out now.
Dan, I have actually, we'll get back to the aesthetic. I have a Jacksonville question for you. You're born and raised in Jacksonville, right?
Yeah.
Do you know Fred Durst or his family?
I was looking at Fred Durst's Instagram today, but he went to high school with my mom.
Oh, like same year?
I don't know exactly, but they went to the same high school for sure.
Damn. Sit me next to Carson Daly and Fred Durst. Find out who Christina gave head to first. That's an Eminem line for you kids at home.
Great Eminem line.
Yeah. I watched Lollapalooza yesterday. Like, I signed up for Hulu so I could watch it, but then I missed Limp Bizkit. And yesterday I went out, I got donuts. I smoked a joint outside, and I just hung out in my office and watched Limp Bizkit at Lollapalooza. And my wife even came in, and she was like, this is, like, the happiest I've seen you in a while. Like, you just look really happy right now. And then also she was like, why do you know all the words to all these songs? I've never heard you listen to a Limp Bizkit song ever. And I was just like, yeah, I mean, I listened to them a billion times years ago. But yeah, back to the aesthetic in Miami. Listen, Miami as a whole is garbage, is very much garbage. The reason we didn't go to that thing is I looked. I remember we talked about, like, yo, should we go to that game? And I looked. And I was like, all right, where am I going to stay? Like, because I'm going to stay somewhere somewhat nice. You know, I'm not looking for a motel. And everything I looked at, it was just like neon lights. And I was just like, this isn't me. This is not me at all. But being colorblind, the yes box, the little like score bug, whatever the Marlins color, I think it was a blue, my wife told me that was. So when the Yankees are up, the Yankees have like the navy blue right next to it. It's the Marlins blue. When the Yankees are up, the outs are the navy blue, and the guys on base are the navy blue. For the Marlins, it's that light blue, which to me looks gray, so I couldn't tell how many outs there were or who was on base if I had, like, if I went to go get water or something. Like, if I wasn't watching, I didn't know what was going on.
I didn't even notice that. To me, it just looked very dark. Like, it was just, like, I don't know if it was something with the lights.
I think
the
roof.
It was just a dark vibe.
I think their original intent for that stadium was at night, with those lights and the dome closed, it would be fine. But during the day, with the dome closed, I think the lighting's probably just, like, not great.
Okay.
And because they had said at the beginning of, I think it was the beginning of the broadcast or the Friday game, it used to be grass, and Jeter had all the grass ripped out, and it's turf now, and they just, like, keep the roof closed. So they don't have to pay the whatever it costs to open and close the roof so that it gets rain and sun for the grass. It's a very cheap move.
That kind of makes sense, though, because how many days in Miami during the baseball season would you even want to have the roof open? Like, maybe the beginning of April and the very end of the season? Dan's saying zero. I kind of agree with him.
Well, I mean, what's it matter? Like, who does it impact? There are no fans there anyway. Who gives a shit?
There were some Yankee fans there. But no, when we talked about going to Miami, it was in February when we didn't know if we'd be able to go to games in New York or what the deal would be. And it was like, oh, well, they'll definitely let you in Florida. But for me, Miami in July, I run way too hot for that. I'd be way too sunburned. That would have been a disaster.
Miami in July would have been tough. Miami, if, like, even though, like, we're vaccinated, like, I'm not fucking to Florida right now. It's not the place to be.
No, sorry, no, Dad. I haven't been on a plane yet either.
Yeah, no, I haven't been on a plane. I don't really care. Well, right now I'm not dying to, but, like, I'm not dying. You know, hey, you're vaccinated, you hope for the best, but it's having a kid. That's a tough thing.
No, you're right. Speaking of planes, though, I will be going to Chicago next weekend when the Yankees visit the White Sox. So I will be at the Saturday game at Guaranteed Rate Field, I think is what it's called.
Nice. Let me give you some tips.
Yep.
In center field, there's, like, area you could stand, kind of like Yankee Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And then behind that, there's, like, you know, where people normally walk, and there's food vendors. There is a burger that they have, that they had out there. I forget the name of it. I'll look it up. It may be better than the Burrata Burger at Yankee Stadium. It was one of the best burgers I've ever had in my life. It was very good. Their Cuban sandwiches are pretty good. If you're into corn, they have, like, elote, like, street corn.
Nice, outfield. Yeah, I love that.
Very good. So those are my tips. Don't drink any Malort. Malort's gross.
What's that, like the Chicago Bud Light?
It's like, no, it's a liquor, and it tastes like licking a floor mat in a car. It's so bad.
Ugh.
You should actually do it just to see what it's like. It's like their thing. Like how, like, Florida's thing is like meth or like fake weed that makes you bite someone's face off. Dan just takes a beating.
Dan takes the Florida stuff personally. We were doing that with the roller coasters last week, too. It's personal for him.
No. Dan actually, someone was like, hey, listen, I'm from Montana. We have more than two escalators. It might be Wyoming. One of those states only has two. But Dan takes a Florida beating. And he kind of looks like, oh, come on, Jacksonville's close to Georgia. Like, that's going to change anything for me. Yeah, no, going to Miami seemed like a nightmare. It seemed like the BP, like, South Florida crew, though, went. They had a good time, it looked like.
Yeah, no, they were getting after it. And then next week, we got the – I totally forgot about this, the Field of Dreams game.
Yeah.
Is next Thursday. To me, I'm not a huge movie guy. I don't really care about that, but some people are really into it, so.
Have you ever seen Field of Dreams?
I've seen it once, yeah.
Have you ever? Oh, I've got like a possibly for work the first week of September. I'm going to go to it looks like I'm going to go to a Durham Bulls game.
Ooh, cool.
Which is like, you know, it's not the same stadium, but it's, you know, a cool place to go to. Bull Durham's my favorite sports movie.
Is it your favorite movie of all time or just favorite?
No, Goodfellas.
Gotcha.
Yeah, Goodfellas is number one. Bronx Tale's number two. Bull Durham might be number three.
Any movie like Goodfellas where you have the main character narrating, it's very easy to watch. Like, I like that first person narration.
Yeah, I mean, I love Goodfellas. We had like the Goodfellas, we had the Christmas tree from Goodfellas for a number of years. Then the Susie thing happened and we were on the news and we have this trashy white with like purple balls fucking Christmas tree. And people were like, what is wrong with these people? And then other people in comments would be like, it's Goodfellas. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think for like this upcoming week, this is another, you know, you look for like a like line in the sand, like a place where they, you know, plant their foot and we're not going back any further than this. And like this week's as good as any.
Yeah, it is. And if they go 5-5, you know, they're not for real. Like if they fuck this up and can't beat up on the easy teams, the Orioles and the Royals, you know, they're not for real. But if they do go 7-3 or 8-2, you know, you could start to believe again. Now, with that being said, to me, the second wild card is not good enough. They need home field advantage in that wild card game.
That's what I was going to say. I think so. You know, getting to a wild card game is never enough. The World Series is the only acceptable thing. There's no, we can lose winning the World Series. If we go and we lose the World Series, it's not a building block. I don't think like we've built a foundation that now we're just like a move away from. So it's now it's like, hey, let's just be dumb enough to win. And I think that getting the momentum on our side of finding that first wild card, hoping that Boston collapses because, you know, but they are getting Sale back, so who knows, or that the Rays collapse enough that we can get up there and we can catch that, you know, home field advantage, win that game and build some momentum, then I think maybe we have a chance.
Yeah, to me, that's the difference. And this group hasn't proven shit. But the one thing they have proven is that they can win wild card games at home. And maybe not even that. Maybe it's our crowd that has proven it. Because it's almost like, I don't know, I was at the wild card game in 17 and 18. The crowd basically willed the team to win, it felt like. So that's one thing you can kind of count on is if they can line up Cole at home in the wild card game, great. If they have to go to the Trop and face a bullpen game, bad. If they have to go to Fenway and face Sale in a one game, bad. So you need to get that game at home.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Like, that's what we're really playing for. I'm not happy enough making the playoffs. We can still win, but we're not, you know, we're not setting ourselves up for success.
No. Second wild card game is not where we want to be. And then a little bit of around the league, something I found funny. The Mets were unable to sign the 10th overall pick, Kumar Rocker, who, for all intents and purposes, was like the third best pitcher in college baseball this year. He's a total stud. They had some quabbling about the MRI and the health with Boris. I just thought it was funny that, you know, everybody said once Uncle Steve showed up that it wasn't going to be the same old Mets and everything was going to change. And clearly it's still the same.
Yeah, I mean, from what I saw of this, they drafted him. They got to examine him once after the draft. And with that, they said, we don't think you're worth your slot money because of something we're seeing in your medical. So they offer him less. He says no. And now he has to either play independent ball, sign in Japan, or you know, or just sit out the year and enter the draft next year. And, I mean, there's a billion problems with the way, like, these kids coming into baseball are treated.
Oh, they're totally exploited.
But I think with the system that they have, if there's an amount of money for a slot, that's it. You can't offer less than that. Because like now this guy, like if whatever the slot was, and I don't know the number, but if that slot is $7 million and they go, oh, well, we looked at your stuff. So listen, we're going to offer you $3 million. He has no recourse other than to miss a year of making money.
Right.
Or right. He could have gone back to school, but, you know, he didn't want to, which makes sense because he's an adult trying to make money. I mean, the fact that they have to stay 3 years in college is bullshit too if they go to a four-year school. So it should, you know, the Mets now lose nothing. They get the 11th pick next year and whatever they get, whatever their draft pick is. And this kid misses out on it. And we saw it happen a couple years ago with, I think it was like with Houston, where there was a kid with a similar situation.
Yeah.
He was supposed to get like $6 million. They offered him two. You know, the value of the 10th slot is, what was that? 4.73. The Mets offered six.
But then they pulled it. They pulled the six, I think.
Oh, okay.
Because Rocker wasn't supposed to fall to 10. I think he was supposed to be five or six. He fell.
I thought he was talking of like being like a two or three.
Yeah, but if you're the Mets, like, why? You're kind of in a win-now situation. DeGrom's 33. Lindor's going to turn 29. Like, I don't understand kicking the can down the road. I'd want to get him in here now, maybe get him up towards the end of next year, like, while you have DeGrom still in his prime. I don't understand. I mean, I know they get the pick next year, but that doesn't really make sense.
I mean, I don't watch a lot of Met games. But I know they're in first place. They're in first place in a division that stinks. Like, they wouldn't be sniffing the playoffs if they were in another division. This guy just pitched in the College World Series, pitches with Jack Leiter. I don't, you know, now I'm not a Met fan, so I'm not worried about their future. But, like, isn't there some – this guy could have contributed this year.
Yeah. Yeah. He was pretty much ready. He just would need some innings maybe.
Yeah. You could pick up a couple innings in AAA and then come to the big leagues this year if you're making a go for it. I think, you know – I think it's fucked. Like, hey, if you draft me and you don't want to sign me, then to at least the slot. He should be able to get at least the slot. And if, you know, I don't know the finer details of it, but if it's less than the slot, he should be able to be a free agent.
Yeah, no, it's very unfair. And then Cohen had that really poor tweet where he like called him an asset or something and referred to Kumar Rocker as an investment, which, you know, if you're going to be on, I know like Cohen wants to be on Twitter, kind of being a man of the people, but that's not how to do it.
Yeah, but like, I don't think so. Like, what's the issue? Like, what's the issue with saying that? Like, it's an investment. I'm running a business. He was a stockbroker, or, you know, he's a stock guy. That's how he made his money. That's how he got the money to buy the team.
I get it, but I don't think players like hearing that. I don't think players like being referred to as assets. And if you're a player that's going to be a free agent, you're thinking about coming to a team. I don't know. I just don't think other players would like that. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think he's being honest. You know, I find it refreshing. I saw that. He said, you know, the value is, I think it was something like five times whatever the slot is. Like, that's supposed to be the value of the team. And they didn't see that. So, you know, but at the same time, if you don't see that, the guy shouldn't be stuck with no options.
And you should have maybe drafted somebody else. Like, didn't they have a chance to look at him before? I don't know. The whole thing kind of makes no sense. And look, they get the pick next year, but we've talked about it, how like the top 10, that's really the only place to get where you kind of guaranteed elite talent. And you have this guy that's pretty much a sure thing, like you talked about in the College World Series and all that. And then just to let him get away, it just seems really stupid to me. But it's not our problem at the end of the day.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's for us to laugh at.
Yes, yes. Dan, you got a little segment for us.
So I only had one question.
Okay.
Not too hard, but we'll see.
All right.
So, how many total wins do the New York Yankees as a franchise have?
This is going to be a whoever comes closer type thing.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's try that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's like, I'm going with 10,000.
Nick?
We've been around for what's can you tell me what 110 times 90 is? Because that would be my answer.
990.
110 times 90 is my answer.
It's 990. So right. Jack's closest, or JJ's closest, they have 10,467 career wins.
Okay.
I thought we hit 10,000. Like, I couldn't remember if it was 5 years ago or like seven, or I knew it wasn't during the Boone time. I also remember living in Philly when the Phillies hit 10,000 losses.
I was at that game. Yeah, I was at that game. It was like history, which is hilarious. Yeah, they were the first professional sports team to 10,000 losses. Yeah. Because that was probably like you were in college, I was in high school-ish.
Yeah, when was it? Oh, 2007, yeah.
Yep.
I remember that.
I was like, in high school. Yeah, fucking suck.
Yeah, listen, hey, I think that's all we got for this week. I mean, again, I think that there is more that could have been done. I think there's like one more move. Maybe the move wasn't out there. Maybe, you know, if we got another starter instead of the Blue Jays, it, you know, it changes things. Maybe we would have had to deplete things. Oh, another thing. I mean, little Pedro is fucking done.
Done.
Like, it is this guy. We were wondering, like, how is he not opening day roster? His career might legitimately be over. He is so bad.
He's got a 10 ERA and triple. It's like ungodly.
He gave up like three runs in one inning, and that was it in his last outing.
Yeah, I never understood people being high on him. It's like the Tinkerbell thing. They see, oh, we have a decent pitching prospect, and you just want him to turn out well. But as we keep saying, how many dominant 5'7" starting pitchers are there in the American League? And he had two starts this year against the Orioles and the Tigers, the two worst teams, and he couldn't beat either of them. It's like, I think we've seen enough.
Yeah, it's not good. All right, you can follow Nick on Twitter.
At NKirbyNYY.
You can follow Dan on Twitter.
Juski99.
Follow the show at George's Box Pod. Follow me at JJ from the Bronx. Leave a comment, leave a review, leave us 5 stars, all that fun stuff. Tell a friend, share it. Listen, I don't know. I mean, this next 10 days may help us figure out if there's going to be a parade. So, hey, if there's a parade, we'll see you at it.